Hey, everybody. Welcome to this week's episode of Making Sense of It All with Jesse Stakes. When I grow up, I want to be my guest today, the yield coach, Ian Brown. All kidding aside, Ian is one of the most well-rounded real estate professionals that I know. I joke in our conversation that he's a unicorn, but he really kind of is. He has an education background. He spent time as a property appraiser and even helped with the financial workouts during the real estate crisis of 2008 and 2009. He has a law degree and he's practiced real estate law as well as closing transactions for buyers and sellers. He also puts his own money where his mouth is, and he's a proven success when it comes to investment real estate. I hope you enjoy this conversation with the yield coach Ian Brown as he shares how he is providing real estate investment opportunities for others that are interested in doing things with him. He's also educating those who are interested in learning more about investing in real estate. And he's still bringing buyers and sellers together when it makes sense to do transactions for them. Without further ado, let's jump right into it.
Jesse Stakes, it's good to be here.
So for those of you who don't know, I was on Ian's podcast late last year, and I'm glad that I could return the favor because I feel like Ian has a tremendous story to tell and he's got a lot to offer himself. So instead of, you know, being the host, I get to flip the seats on you today.
I like that. We're flipping the script today. Yes, and obviously I have a show too, the Jacksonville Commercial Real Estate Show. You were just on. You were a killer guest. Everybody should check out that episode with Jesse. But thanks for having me on, man.
Absolutely. And we'll talk about that a little bit later. First, I want to kind of talk about the yield coach and what is the yield coach?
Yeah, I probably should have come up with a more straightforward name. So I actually anticipated it being a hybrid coaching platform and investment platform, and it's really more of an investment platform with thought leadership and education. That's fancy talk for we do syndications like 506Cs. We'll probably do a B as well. So we take on LP, passive income for investors, LP investors. We go source deals. We raise capital, primarily commercial and or industrial, some multifamily. And that is largely what I do. I buy and sell commercial real estate, raise private capital. So I'm kind of a deals and money Jacksonville commercial real estate guy. The thought leadership side is primarily our podcast, that Jacksonville Commercial Real Estate Show. And we try to stay reasonably active on social. It's not my strength, but we're trying.
So I think we'll probably grab each piece of that and break it down a little bit, because I think some people are going to hear that and they're going to completely get it. And then other people, it's going to fly right over their head. It's going to sound a little intimidating and they're going to, you know, they're just not going to understand it, or they're just going to stop listening. And I think it's very important because I think there's a lot of things that you do that can help a lot of people invest their money better, invest it in different ways, and potentially be able to make more money than what they are right now in you know, their 401k or in other ways. Before we get to that, though, I really do want to talk about you a little bit. And can you give me a little bit of a brief backstory as to kind of how the yield coach came about? Like there's so many pieces to your story, and I think it's amazing. Not looking for, you know, I'm not looking for necessarily a whole origin story, but kind of talk about your background and talk about what you have brought together as far as a complete field of knowledge around real estate and how you've been able to come up with the yield coach.
Yeah, and I will avoid the long-winded origin story, but I think it's uncommon that I come from a family of educators. I was a Florida State history major, and I taught high school. I coached football. I coached track. Those are not the origins of a syndicator putting out commercial real estate offerings and taking on private capital. So I will say for me, the first time I paid rent, and it was actually at Florida State in Tallahassee, the first time I paid rent, I didn't know anything about real estate, finance, mortgages, debt coverage ratios, rates of return, nothing. But I was like, I am paying this guy a lot of money. There's four of us doing it, and this house is a Cracker Jack box. And so I started to think like, okay, this is a, and I worked for my own money in undergrad. I was bartending and waiting tables. And although I was a history major and I would graduate and coach and teach, I knew I wanted to be in real estate. It also, it's tangible. So I knew like, okay, even when I was young, I would like paint and pressure wash or do landscaping. I could kind of get my mind around like what would improve a property. And I've always been good with people. So I was like, well, I'm sure I could like find a tenant, manage a tenant, fix the asset. Turns out I do very little of any of those things now, but it was what triggered me to think, oh, I can actually do this. So I go from being a high school teacher. I was a teacher for a couple of years. My now 18-year-old daughter was born and I was like, oh, damn, I got to find a way to, you know, make a little bit of money here. A family friend, Eric Hector.
Kids are expensive.
Kids are very expensive. I got three of them, so I'm triple expensed. And a family friend, Eric Hector, brought me into commercial real estate appraisal. Didn't even really know what I was getting into, but I went full to all of the certified general real estate appraisal coursework. And that's what really introduced me to cash flows, valuation, the three approaches to value, running a discounted cash flow analysis, learning about cap rates and discount rates and terminal cap rates and everything in between, analyzing commercial leases. All there's so much to it. And I learned it in this 3-year period. Now I'm a lifetime learner, so it's been more like 18 years, but those initial 3 to 5 years were critical. So to directly answer your question, I kind of started as this, you know, this history major, teacher, coach guy. And once I got my mind around investment real estate, there was really no turning back. I did go to law school in the downturn. So from about 2010 to 2013, I came out and I was expecting the economy to be, you know, just gangbusters, because when everything kind of started to fall apart in the fall of 2008, a lot of us, of course, I was pretty young back then. Yeah, a lot of us thought by 2013, it's going to be rosy again. Well, I graduated law school in 2013. I passed the bar. Nobody was hiring real estate legal positions. And if they were, they were paying less than I made as an appraiser. They're paying more like I made as a teacher and a coach. And I was like, damn, I got some big loans and there's not really any opportunity here. So I was already a licensed appraiser and already a licensed broker when I graduated law school. So what I decided to do is go right into the commercial deal-making community, specifically commercial brokerage. And I did title and escrow as like a supplemental legal service doing closings. And I still broker some. It's probably one of my last remaining services. But I did title and escrow for 7 years. And I was like, you know what? This really is like white collar indentured servitude. I'm just grinding away. There's no way to hit a home run here. I'm just servicing loans. And could I maybe eventually retire with maybe get these debts off my back? Maybe, but nothing like I envisioned when I went to law school. So I knew I needed to start emulating the people that I saw having success. And that was primarily my clients. So I decided about at age 35, so like 7 years ago, to kind of flip the script and become my own client, behave like my own clients, transact like my own clients. So when I started to find deals that would be good for a client and it would check my own personal underwriting, well, now that contract's going to have my name on it. Now we're going to start raising capital. We're going to start talking to lenders and we're going to get these deals done. And so it was just a complete flip of the switch. And I, like I said, I still offer limited services, but I'm primarily an investor.
Was that a painful process for you? Was it something, and I, you know, I think about going from like a W-2 employee and going from someone who has kind of got an income that you're providing a service to people there. It's almost like, you know, that's kind of guaranteed a little bit that it's going to happen. And then you go into this investor mindset to where dollar one isn't guaranteed, but the upside is so much more than what the upside is of being that employee. But was that process painful for you? Was it something to where it took was it hard to take your mind from one position to another? Or was it something that you already knew you wanted to be at? You were already excited about it. And so it may have been a challenge, but it was still an easy switch.
I wouldn't say it was easy, but I knew that if I didn't do it, you kind of have that fear of regret power, you know, it hits you and you're like, okay, I'm going to have this overwhelming fear of this regret's going to hit me like an avalanche if I don't do this. And so I decided, it's kind of a funny mindset, but for me, I already had, you know, the big law school loans. I didn't, you know, I'm like, why not now? Like, now is the time. Like, what do I have to lose? And so I had like the background and the skill set, and I felt like, you know, like now's the time to do it. And so, and this is probably a teachable point right here. I would start, for those that are considering like starting a journey like mine, I would start with a risk that won't quote unquote take you out, something that you can suffer if you're completely wrong with your assumptions. So I think some people start with something too big or risky. And if it doesn't work and it doesn't work, that's probably it. A lot of times, you know, you don't get to keep playing the game. Like a lot of people, they get burned and they never come back in. How many people have you heard of that like lost their ass in the fall of 2008 and beyond and never did another real estate deal other than their home? So the power of screwing this up is not to be understated. So do something that you can learn from. It won't, like I said, it won't take you out if you're wrong. You can suffer the consequences. And in my opinion, I would do something where you, the investor, have all or a very high degree of control. So I could probably pause right there for a little bit. But like with me, I started with the first property I did was this like $38,000 house in my own zip code up by I-10, 32205 is where I lived back then. And I was like, man, I mean, the land is worth more than this little thing. And it needed rehab, but yeah, I bought it for 38. I had comps at 165. I knew I could rebuild it if I had to for $100,000. So I was like, okay, let's start with this thing. There's, you know, at least I'll learn from it. And I did. And that was, I learned a lot from that little deal. I'd never do a deal like that again, but I 1031 roughly $55,000 from that deal into an 8-unit apartment. And that apartment had HUD and Section 8. And I got to learn about HUD and Section 8 and the Jacksonville Housing Authority. I got to learn about multifamily property management. And I sold that, moved into a 28 unit. I've got an 83 unit. So I just started moving up the food chain. But you have to start somewhere. And I started somewhere. Don't look at where I am now and be like, that's what I want. What I would do is figure out what you can do, what you can suffer if it doesn't go right, what you're going to learn from, and just start eating the elephant one bite at a time.
So, you know, one of the things that I was taught early in my career, and I think that it really applies here, is to build your career like a pyramid rather than building it like a totem pole. And so when people hear your story, you think about you have the experience of being an appraiser. You do have the experience of being a teacher and understanding what it means to actually coach somebody through a process. You have the experience of being a real estate attorney, and you have that knowledge underneath your belt. And you've had all these experiences of doing these deals. And so there's a lot of folks who will be listening to this that don't have that breadth of experience. And I think they get intimidated by it. Like I said in the opening, they hear everything, they don't understand it, and the natural reaction is to say no, or the natural reaction is to walk away. And I think this dovetails in very nicely to what you're doing with the Yield Coach. The fact that you're offering your experience in the pyramid that you have built as an investor and as a professional, you're bringing people into deals now. You're bringing people an opportunity to be a part of the things that you're doing they don't necessarily have to build the career that you've built, but they can actually benefit from everything that you have done over the last 20 years.
Yeah, I think that there's kind of two paths of people. You have those that are already satisfied or content with their work. And let's just assume that they're like a higher income earning W-2, maybe CPA, a dentist, an attorney, doctor, whatever it is. So actually nowadays technology people are making a lot of money, but you know, you're somebody, you know, there's a lot of non-traditional paths that are making a lot of money right now, but you're somebody who's also highly taxed. So if you're a high W-2 earner, you're the highest taxed person in America. So, and attorneys fall into that too, a lot of my peers. So what I like to do for that bucket of people is allow them to come into my deals as a limited partner investor, enjoy the benefits of depreciation. You have insulated risk as a limited partner investor. We try to do deals. We underwrite to a 2 to 3 times. So a 2 to 3 times multiple in not more than 5 years. So 2 to 3 times your money in not to exceed 5 years. I'm saying it very plainly. It's a lot more detailed than that, but for this conversation, that's our kind of our box. And we tend to do things in Northeast Florida with really good teams. So like just as an anecdote, one of our upcoming efforts, boat and RV storage, I have the best broker in Jacksonville and a close friend. I was best man at his wedding. He has the sites. He's my partner. I have the guy with all the aggregate, the bulldozers, the site clearing equipment. He's the third partner. So we have the sites, we have me, we have a guy clearing the land. It's not that complicated of a business model. And so we're really like shrinking down the risk profile and what we do. And so that's a service we offer to like that higher income W-2 earner. Then for those that just want to, you know, learn more, listen to these podcasts. You know, we're going to start doing some meetups and, you know, I put out some educational content. So if you want to do more like walk in my shoes, so to speak, you know, we have a platform to at least begin assisting with that. So I kind of consider two buckets of people because some people are very content. They're happy. They're high income earners, but they need to figure out alternative investments, like you mentioned 15 minutes ago, especially some tax advantaged investments. And then you have those that are like, you know what, I am disillusioned and lost and I need to find something else to do. And we also offer at least a kind of an entry point for that as well.
I think that's amazing. And I think that it's, you know, you're not just lowering the risk from an investment perspective, but you are lowering the risk for people who are interested in real estate, interested in getting involved in it, but they just haven't known where to start. And you're giving somebody that jumping off point if they do want to make a career change or if they just want to make a change in the way that they invest their own money.
Yeah, I think that having commercial real estate on your balance sheet in some form is wise. It's a whole separate topic for different podcasts, but I think, you know, for those of you that have retirement accounts, start looking into self-directing, maybe some of those funds. You can self-direct investment real estate, self-direct some of your IRAs into real estate syndications. I'm not saying you move it all into real estate. I mean, I'm a real estate guy. So of course, almost all of my net worth and almost all my efforts, it's all in commercial real estate. That's what I've built. That's what I do. However, if you're just trying to learn more, get involved, I would look into self-directing maybe a portion of your holdings. I think that's a good way to kind of, you learn when you start putting some money into deals. It's a lot different than, you know, listening to a podcast or watching a YouTube video. Another thing, I'm really big on essentially personal awareness, self-awareness. So one big thing that kind of moved the needle for me as a professional was realizing two books I like a lot, Rocket Fuel and Who Not How. And some people, they're listening to this and they're like, well, I don't have, you mentioned it earlier, Ian's a broker, an attorney, an appraiser. He's done all these real estate deals. Honestly, read Rocket Fuel and read Who Not How just as some examples. And start to, what you'll start to realize is it's not as essential that you have the personal education credentials and resume to do some of these things. You need the right combination of professionals. You need the right team. You don't have to be all the things that even I am. And what I've realized, and I'm about to be 42, I don't even need all the things that I am and have. I could do what I'm doing with less skill than I have. I'll pause there for a moment, but this stuff gets me excited. I could go all day.
No doubt. No, I think I've heard more people than just you that I consider successful say the same thing. You got to have the right team of people around you. You can't do everything alone. Nobody can. So if you're that person who fights asking for help, you're going to be challenged at some point in your life. So I think that's a tremendous point.
Yeah, it's also a lonely journey too. If you don't do it with a team, or at least I did a lot alone, and I still do quite a bit of what I do alone. But I will say, I would love to see like, okay, reincarnation is real. We come back, we get to do this all again. I don't think it's going to happen though. I really think like this is our one go on earth, and hopefully then we, you know, float up to heaven. But I try to take advantage of every moment I have on earth. And we can't replace time. We don't know how much time we have. And so my main why, if you will, like my main reason for a lot of this going back years was freedom. Not everybody has the same whys, but for me, it was like freedom of time, freedom of movement, freedom of decision-making, freedom of association, all these things. Like, those just mean so much to me. And I was like, you know what? I want to have, I think I coined this term. I haven't heard somebody else say it. I want to have infinite hang time. And kind of like your hang time is that period of time in between a capital event, meaning I want to get to a position where time is not going to, you know, a capital event is not going to concern me. I want to have infinite hang time. And in commercial real estate and investment and passive income can get you to that position, in my opinion, faster than any other avenue that I've seen.
No doubt. So let's talk about the real estate market a little bit, especially the real estate market here in Florida and in Jacksonville specifically. It's been hot now for several years. I mean, we've been red hot, and I think people have been a little bit concerned with where things are going. What, in your opinion, what do you think is going to happen here in the near future, as far as, 2024, 2025? Do you see it as a good time to be jumping into the market?
Well, I'm going to make one assumption and then I'll give an answer. On the assumption that the election year doesn't create something kind of weird or unforeseeable, or it's, and the global political situation has gotten a little frothy. So those are things that are really hard as a real estate investor to kind of like, what can I do about,
uncontrollables?
Yeah, they're really like almost like these black swan events and stuff. Assuming there's not like a black swan event, I think it's going to be a pretty stable 2024. So I expect to see an uptick in transactions. So for commercial real estate guys and gals, there has been half or less of the commercial real estate transactions. I don't mean value, I mean transactions, but transactions are way down. Luckily, values stayed pretty flat. You didn't really see cratering of values. So under the assumption that, you don't have these atypical motivations or black swan events, then we should have a pretty stable 24 with, let's say, rate slide, just for conversation purposes, a point in 24. Well, at least like in multifamily, some of these assets that are very down to like the basis point on a cap rate, they're essentially playing an arbitrage rate on like their mortgage rate and their cap rate, and they're just trying to create just a little bit of upside operationally. A lot of those deals are done, tens and tens and tens of millions of dollars, in one apartment, a $50 million deal. 50 basis points on a $50 million deal is a huge difference. So what I'm getting at is some of these guys are kind of locked because of what they paid and under the debt terms that they're in for their deals they did from like 19, 20, 21, 22. So if they can kind of get to a point where maybe they've pushed their rents and pushed their business plan to a point where their NOI is high enough to where maybe now they can actually transact again under today's or maybe 12 months from now lending environment, that might loosen up some transactions. I am still seeing decent volume in what I would call like retail leasing or commercial leasing, not so much office, but, retail. I have some people that are reaching out to me looking for some commercial space. And there seems to be a lot of people that are still willing to expand a business right now and sign a lease and commit. A little harder to sell the actual asset. I know myself personally, we'll transact in 2024. But I'm expecting less participants in 2024, not less than necessarily 2023, but probably some people coming into the re-engaging in the marketplace, maybe more in the back half. So hopefully that's an answer. I think it's going to be, I think a fairly stable year in my opinion. And hey, the beauty of podcasting, you can go back and, a year from now we can review this and see if I was right. I just don't see a reason why it would be like something crazy would happen. One more caveat. I know I'm running long on this answer. I'm also assuming that banks are not going to behave like they did in the last downturn. Let's say we do hit like a stronger headwind, recessionary forces. I'm assuming that banks have more of an appetite to restructure and work out debt. There was so much real estate taken back by banks and then sold for 10, 20, 30, 40 cents on the dollar. I'm just assuming there's not an appetite to do that because it just didn't go very well last time. So that's another large assumption, that banks have an appetite to restructure if need be.
And to that point, I think that one of the biggest differences is that everyone's seeing this coming. They've seen kind of with the interest rates creeping up and with banks already looking at their commercial portfolios, I think that they know that there are certain events coming where they're trying to head it off. They're trying to get out in front of it when it comes to good example with when you talk about these apartment complexes. There's apartment complexes that were done on rates when rates were done at 3 or 4%, and they were stress test at 6%. Well, now you have normal rates that are around 8%. So that deal that was done 5 years ago or 3 years ago at a very small rate compared to what the market's at now, they already know that they're going to have to requalify those projects or refinance those projects on a significantly larger rate than what they were. So when you talk about those deals that were done with such small margins, but small margins on very large numbers, it is giving banks some heartburn, and they are trying to figure out, okay, what do we do with this? But it's those conversations are already being had. So to your point, I think that it is being approached differently than what it was in 2008, 2009 with the residential real estate market. That being said, as an investor, and this might be a complicated answer, but you can boil it down to an anecdote if you'd like, as far as just something that you've had recently. How do you evaluate a deal when you're bringing a deal to market and you're saying, hey, I have this for you to invest in as your customers or as the people that are trusting in the yield coach? How do you evaluate a deal to ensure that you're going to be able to be profitable and to be able to, for it to become what you believe that it's going to be able to become?
That's a great question. And although I have this, you know, this background that is unique, I don't know a lot of attorney, broker, appraisers, I actually start with a very
unicorn.
So let's just say, okay, Ian, the unicorn, I actually start with a super, super bare knuckles napkin test. I don't do a deal that doesn't pass. People probably heard of the napkin test, meaning I can pull out a napkin and sketch out some numbers. And I know a lot of, well, nowadays I can do a lot of it in my head, but I am going to eventually get to a detailed Excel financial model process. So we're going to go so deep in the woods. However, I am never going to open up that model if it doesn't pass that initial high level filter. And to specifically answer your question, I need to see something that is not obvious to everyone, or I need to have a unique angle to the property. Maybe nobody knows about the opportunity. That does happen in my world. When you get a reputation, and I've been doing real estate 18 years and I've been in Jacksonville almost my whole life, I mean, most of my adult life. So I start to get deal flow that not everybody sees. Well, that's huge. Like if it's the stock market, that would be illegal. That would be insider trading and I'd go to jail. But in commercial real estate, knowing something that no one else knows is 100% legal. So I get to have this like insider trading advantage sometimes. I'll do deals that I have an atypical advantage in my outcome. And then bolt on one other thing. I'll try to look for a deal that has an untapped upside, a change in highest and best use, maybe it may be a rezoning. A quick anecdote, and I will be quick. I did a 4-unit office a couple blocks from the beach in Atlantic Beach. It was an office, but it was zoned in a way that allowed short-term rentals, hotel, motel, short-term rental, which in Atlantic Beach is a 90-day minimum. Very tough to do an Airbnb in Atlantic Beach, and they will crack down on you if you break that rule. Well, I'm like, this is an office, and it was sitting there on CoStar. Like, I mean, you could find it. I think it had a sign on it, and it had been sitting for a little while. I did negotiate a fair amount off the price, but the main thing I did is I converted it from a 4-unit office to a 4-unit Airbnb. And the thing went from doing like $600 a month rents to $4,000 gross revenue per unit. So, I mean, you talk about a change. Now I had to renovate it, add fire suppression, rebrand it, but it's still the same box. It's still the same 4 units. That was a zoning and highest and best use play. And I did not have to rezone it. I just changed the use that was being used within the zoning code. And that's an anecdote, but that deal had incredible margin, mostly because of just being able to see something that not everybody was seeing.
No, I think that's tremendous. And I think that those are the things where people benefit from working with you to do deals. Basically, if you don't understand it, if it's something to where you're interested in the market, you don't understand exactly all the pieces that you're dealing with, it's a great reason to go to the yield coach. I want to talk about your podcast a little bit before we get out of here, because I think that your podcast is bringing a lot of great people, a lot of great minds in the real estate market out in the public for people to listen to what they're doing, to listen to their stories, how they became successful, especially around the Northeast Florida market. So tell me a little bit about the Yield Coach, or excuse me, the Jacksonville Real Estate Podcast.
Yeah. And it was the Yield Coach Show, but yes, we rebranded to the Jacksonville Commercial Real Estate Podcast. And we have recorded maybe a half dozen episodes, but I'm excited about it because it's essentially me having punchy conversations with the people and the faces behind what you're reading in the Daily Record or you're reading in the Jack's Business Journal. So I'm trying to get those faces on the show. I'm getting commercial brokers. I had Katie Matura, who's chief marketing director for Visit Jacksonville. They take a portion of all of the hotel bed tax money, put together data, and market the city for groups and events. She's been doing that job for over 15 years. I mean, you talk about bringing demand to Jacksonville. I mean, she knows it inside and out. She was a recent guest. You know, I'm trying to get people that can kind of give you some insight. Ideally, I'm trying to give my listeners an advantage. I'm trying to bring people on the show that would give them a slight advantage if they're going to try to navigate Jacksonville's commercial real estate scene.
I think that's tremendous. So everything being said, I think you're going to have a lot of people that have, you know, they at least get a little bit of interest. It piques, you know, it gets them excited in some way. Once, you know, again, if it's something that if they feel like they learned a little bit from this podcast or they, you know, it piqued their interest as far as where they can invest their money, potentially listening to the show. If somebody wants to get in touch with you and if somebody would like to start exploring this process, what is the absolute best way to get in touch with you? How can they start a conversation with the Yield Coach?
Make it real easy. You can just go to investwiththecoach.com. All one word, investwiththecoach.com. And I got a couple questions if you want to answer them. And if you do answer them on the landing page, we'll email you a PDF that helps you vet and underwrite your next commercial real estate opportunity, kind of vet the operator and the partner. So, but that's just an easy way, investwiththecoach.com. And there's actually on there a Calendly page if you go to investwiththecoach.com, and you can even book a quick 15-minute call if you want to kind of learn more about what we do. And yeah, I'm happy to do it. We're here to do more deals, raise more capital, and grow together. So I love this town. I love this community, and just trying to grow with the right people.
Ian, I want to thank you for being on the show. You always have an open invitation to come back. Anytime you have something to share, something to teach the audience, I'd love to have you.
Awesome. Enjoyed it, Jesse.
I know Ian just shared it, but for those of you that are interested in potentially investing with the Yield Coach, I will make sure that everywhere that I put this interview out, there is a link below to their website. There's great resources and materials available there, and as Ian said, sometimes it's just easiest to set up a conversation. That's going to do it for us today. I'll catch you guys next time.